Hello, everyone. This is
Shaylin,
your host of the newest Rent Money Confessions podcast. So I'm Shaylin, and this is my first podcast that I'm starting because second thing to do besides sing with my vocal cords is talk. And boy, I could talk. So I figured it was time at this point of my journey to, one, break the ice if you don't know a lot about me and you only know me from online and songs. This is going to be the place that you can find more in-depth things about me that I just don't know how to make into small clips online. And then, two, I wanted to give you a little insight on the lessons that I have slowly learned over time that are outside of music, that are music, some of them. There's skincare. There's all different kinds of things that I'm going to touch on in this podcast. I'm going to have guests on. I'm going to have all the different things. We're going to do some questions that I'm going to have you guys send in that you want to know about me, anything like that. I want you to be involved and I want to do this journey together. So this is going to be like our little chatty chat moment. All the tea is going to be spilled here in doses, of course. Doses. But I just want to make this a safe place that maybe there's some life lessons that I've picked up on the way that I can hopefully share, or you can ask me questions on each episode that maybe they're helpful for you to not feel so alone, or maybe like somebody else out there relates to you that maybe you didn't think did. So that's going to be this space. And I am really excited because I have teetered for a very long time on do I do a book? Do I do this? And I thought, what better way than to do a podcast? And my LLC is called Rent Money.
Oh, another rent. Any day now, any day.
Rent Money Confessions will kind of be the safe haven for all of the things that when I share them in snippets, like I said, you'll learn a little bit about my music journey and the not so glamorous things, crazy moments that nobody knows about that's happened. All the kind of like secret information. I'm going to talk about it on here. I'm going to talk about my skincare struggles. I'm going to have guests on that. Maybe it's a skincare doctor. I don't know, but it's going to be great. I'm excited. So welcome. This is episode number one, and this is going to be, we're going to title her Rent Money Confessions 1. Thank God there's editing. All right. I'm going to pull up my notes. Okay. So why I'm starting this podcast, like I just told you, is that I wanted a safe haven to talk about things beyond music. I do have a vision for basically my whole job that I've, since I've gotten into music when I was really little. I couldn't have told you what it was or what it meant back then, but I'm a firm believer in my faith. I know that God has led me in every step of the way. Sometimes I listen and sometimes I'm hard-headed. And finally, when I give in to his plan, I'm like, oh, ah, I see what you did there. So I've always kind of like tried to stay as close as I could with like hearing him and knowing where he wants me to go next. And my mission here in this lifetime is to leave the world a little bit better than when I got here by the end of my lifetime. And I think that that's the beautiful thing about using music as a platform, is that my why for all of it is that when I was little, I got to get up on a stage for the first time and sing the church offering. And that was the moment that I couldn't understand back then being so young. But the reason I do this and I've always done it, one is to help people in some way, whether that's my blueprints of my songs and the journal pages I put out that hopefully reach and resonate with people that need them exactly at the right time. And two, there's a moment where on stage, like, and I every night, like it hits me and I just kind of have a secret little, because my why is both of us looking at each other, not like you looking at me like, oh, look at me. It's more of like a me and you right now, everybody in this room for however long this show is, we're one person. Nobody cares about what you look like, where you came from, what you're wearing. Have you ever like thought, oh my God, look like she, like, no, maybe if you're, don't do that, that's mean. But for the most part, when the show starts, you are not looking at anybody. You are literally getting out therapy as far as like what those songs resonate with you. And for whatever reason, you could be screaming, laughing, crying, whatever. But that whole show, it's so cool to look out and be like, wow, we're all one little unit functioning in this room right now. None of us care about anything other than like what we're feeling and how these are like relating to us, and we're getting it out. And I hope that you feel on top of the world when you leave. I hope you feel like you got something out when you leave. But that couple hours in there watching everybody, from my point of view and your point of view, is my why. Because music is about the only thing in this life that can do that as like one whole unity thing in a room. It reminds me to be grateful when I leave there. It reminds me to be kinder to people. And that has always been my why. So my why then, I want to branch it out after music, hopefully, God willing, is the catalyst to help people bigger than that. Like, I want to help people on this podcast. I want to answer questions. I want you to feel like there's somebody out there that maybe you didn't think existed that has gone through something like this. And like, there's a lot of things you don't know about me. And I want to learn about you guys. And so this is another little area where I'm just here to help people. I really want to help people. It makes me the most happy I could be is when I know, like, if it's one person, it'd be cool if it was a bunch of people. But like, as long as I help somebody for the day, I made them feel a little better, my job here is done. So that's my vision. That's my like overall bigger picture outside of music. And another episode, we'll get into like these three centers I have as well, but that's for a different day. As far as this podcast goes, this is a safe haven for you to come to enjoy, laugh, hopefully, because I've been told I'm funny by Kelly Clarkson. It's fine. It's the biggest compliment to me is like, I don't care about anything else. Like, not even you're good at singing or anything. It's you're funny. Yet I'm on top of the world. So Kelly Clarkson told me that. So I'm unstoppable. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. The spiel, if you've ever seen one of my shows, some days it's short, tight, concise. Some days it's 17 minutes long because it has to be. Edit that out. But some days, basically my show, every time I, at the very end, right before my song, What If I Don't, I tell you a little bit about me and the journey that I've had, which is not, it's not short. And I'm going to tell it right now so that you have a little backstory about me and you can find it here on the internet, because I don't think a lot of people know the rest of my chapters outside of Nashville. So long story short, I'm Shaylin. I came out of the womb singing, basically, and eating cookies and had no desire to walk. Peggy Sue, my mother, thought something was wrong with me until I was forced to walk. And they were like, oh, thank God. And I was like, yep, I'm just like eating cookies. And they called me Buddha Belly. It's fine. Anyways, I don't know if that's appropriate. I don't know. What? Anyways, so I like to eat cookies and sing. My whole life, basically, I kicked in my mom's stomach when Amazing Grace would come on. Like, it was always just a thing for me. And when I started to become a little human and have like the wherewithal to figure out what I want to do, and people ask you, what do you want to be when you grow up? I was a singing veterinarian until I realized veterinarians are not all sunshines, rainbows, pet puppies. There are other things that I just can't. I wouldn't. I was like, I can't see an animal hurt. I can only see them in a good space. So when I learned that part about veterinarians, I was like, it's just singing for me, I think. Just singing. So I basically hit the ground running when I, probably 6 years old, I was fascinated by the church choir. And I begged and begged and begged for a church offering solo. And my pastor, Miss June, gave me my first ever solo. It's called Bringing in the Sheaves. And I was about six. And I got to do all the plays after that. But that first solo, Bringing in the Sheaves, that was the moment where I was like, I don't know what this is, but this is the most connected I feel to what, now looking back, was God and my purpose here. And it's always been in there. And so anything I could get my hands on, I was in the local theater. I started my own band called the Black Box Station, and we would rehearse at the Black Box at my high school. Middle school, because I didn't get to go to high school. We'll get there. But I just was fascinated. I thought for a second I was going to go to Broadway, and I love New York. And I just, anything I could get my hands on, I wanted to do it. So Chattanooga is where I was born. Then about around 5, 6, I moved to Dallas. Dallas is where I was at basically up until sophomore year. So just keep that in mind. So I'm in Dallas doing all the things there, and I happened to then get into a pop group called Savvy, and we were just a Christian pop group that toured Texas churches, and like, that was really what that was. Wasn't anything crazy. Then there was a plot twist. It was like, somehow Doreen Spicer, who created the Proud Family, shout out Doreen, she met one of my group members and was like, who are you guys? What's going on? Meets us all, flies to Houston to meet us at the Fellowship of the Woodlands, and was like, I want to create a sitcom around the five of you and do like Hannah Montana meets Saved by the Bell. And I was just like, okay. She's like, I'm going to go do the pilot and write it. And however they came up with the funds, looking back, I don't know. I don't even know if that was my life back then either. So she leaves probably 8 months down the road. Like, they get funding and she comes back and like all of a sudden we're going to film the pilot at the Fellowship of the Woodlands in Houston. So we film a pilot episode for this show called The Wannabes starring Savvy. Savvy was the group name. There's five of us. There's three guys, two girls. And at the time there was three guys, three girls. And each episode, we like went to a prestigious school. Freaking, we're not allowed to perform outside of the school. And our Mr. Moody is the sweet shop owner, and he lets us like sneak in. And we dress as like all these different things. Like each episode, like I'm grapes in one episode. I'm all these different outfits. Like as the seasons go on, so we filmed that first pilot episode, which means like the first episode of getting the storyline down in the Fellowship of the Woodlands. Do it. And I'm like, this is crazy. Like, it's going to get picked up. Okay. Joke's on me, girl. Because I go back. I'm about to go into high school, sophomore year, 15, 16. We get a call. It had been picked up for 26 episodes by Starz Kids and Family in the United States. So I was like, they were like, pack up your bags, because the tax incentive in Michigan was really good at the time. And we went and filmed in Michigan at a vacant high school. And used most of the set as the school, and the other set was built in the gym of the school at Mr. Moody's Sweet Shop. All these people from LA, like, they put us up in our like apartment. My mom came with me because I wasn't 18. All of a sudden, it's like I'm leaving and I'm not going to high school, and I'm homeschooling in a high school at night after filming these episodes. So bizarre. So we do about a year's worth of like every morning we get up at 5, we'd film. All these directors would come in. Like, we had Carlton from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air filmed one of the episodes. He was the director. And I was like, is Carlton, like Carlton is filming one of this episode? What? Like, he's directing? Like, it's such a weird time in my life. So we're like popping off overseas. Like, ABC3, we're in Australia. And we have South America. We're going on a tour in South America. And when I tell you, like, over there, it was starting to become known here on Starz Kids and Family, but it was independently contracted. And we went out there, and I was like, we get out of the van, and people are like, Savvy. I'm like, oh, it's about time. Like, people knew us. I was like, yeah. So then I come back, and nobody knew me here. I was like, I'm me. Nobody cares. But at 15, I was like, this is so cool that people know us, you know, our characters. And then we saw one of the episodes in Spanish on TV, like in the hotel room. And I was like, what? Overdubbed me. Very strange. I'm like, cosita, el baño. That's all I know. And I didn't pay attention in Spanish. Anyways, probably edit that out. So we come back, and then all of a sudden, plot twist number two. Show's doing well. We're about to do a third season. Somehow, young Birdman and Slim from Young Money Cash Money Records finds our group online. And the online, like, YouTube world was, like, not really a thing yet. Like, that wasn't, you didn't get famous on YouTube. It was, like, Star Search and American Idol. So we somehow land on their desk, and they're interested in branching off to the pop side of Young Money and Cash Money with Starships Nikki had just had with Red One. And they wanted a pop group. Here we are, five kids, but none of us besides, I think, one were 18. So we have this show, very wholesome show, and Birdman and Slim fly us to L.A. to showcase at Debbie Reynolds' studio. We're singing, acting, dancing, like hardcore dancing. And we come do a showcase where we're like, I want to dance, like five kids, and Birdman and Slim roll up with like Louis Vuitton bags like, in the cut. In Debbie Reynolds. And we're like, hello, we're about to do our dance routines and show. If you know what Birdman, like, Slim is 6'7", 6'8", maybe. Like, massive human being. Birdman comes in and you can't see anything. You're blinded by his grills. You're like, yeah. Like, it's just, and then there's us, these five kids. So we're just like, and then right now, like, if you don't know who Young Money Cash Money is, they had, at their peak, like, they started with Lil Wayne, Drake, when Drake coming out of Degrassi, Nicki Minaj, like, they had everybody and anybody. They were the biggest label at the time. And then here we are on the roster next to Lil Wayne. So basically, we showcase for them. We do our songs. And Slim, who's 6'7", he's like, man, I just want to, like his voice big guy. And then he's like, so you always part? Like, you can't understand a word he said. And I was just like, what? Like, I was like, does anybody speak slim? Because I don't know what he's, it's like, so man, y'all was shot on the tail. I was like, I can't hear you, sir. So we, apparently he wanted to sign us. That's what that translated to. So we sign to Cash Money Records at the peak of our show. Like, we're about to do the third season and we're still living like in and out of like Michigan with filming. Our parents are some. So all of a sudden, this group of mine, we're about to start third season filming and we get signed to Young Money Cash Money as their first pop group signing. And we're five kids. So we then are flown to Paris to do one part of the album, Paris, France. Yes, five kids with their guardians in Paris. We go to record half of our first album with Red One. Mind you, we all know the song Red One, Convict Gaga. Lady Gaga had just done Just Dance with Red One. So he's popping off, big producer. I get to, in Paris, France, get on the mic and say, Red One, Savvy. I'd made it. I'd peaked. Honestly, I peaked back then. So we're there for a couple weeks. I'm like, this is the life. I'm going to an American Idol red carpet. I'm like, prom? It's cute, guys. Just kidding. I'm like, it would have been fun to go to prom, but it's fine. So we go there. Then we're touring South America. We're gearing up. We have a single called Young and Reckless. Mind you, at the same time, we are also doing, I kid you not, somehow whoever decided this, we're doing a Kmart Blue Light Aisle special tour. Yes, it is exactly what it sounds like. My group and I, we would perform in the Blue Light Aisle, the Blue Light Special, in Kmarts all across America. Like, there was an orange rolling one time at my feet going, I want to dance. Like, what? What sick joke was that? Mad at whoever that was still. So we're doing Blue Light Special Aisle things, and we have a partnership with Sears. We have this song called Young and Reckless. It's going to be the single. We fly back, do the other half of the album in L.A. with some, like, crazy producers at the Paramount Studios. And where we filmed this crazy, like, huge budget video. Like, there's food fight, there's like a zip line of the video at this mansion in LA. Like, I'm like, what is going on? What is my life? We're gearing up for the first single release, and we have a partnership that Young and Reckless, it was a clothing line called the same thing as our song, and we're going to partner with them on like a drop release thing, and it's a whole big thing. We're about to be mega famous, because back then in the music industry, I'm right on the cusp of, like, there was no YouTube, there was no social media that you got famous on. Like, you get a record deal and you probably have like 70, 80% chance of being something, because that's how it worked. So signing a record deal in general, you're like, I'm making it. I'm going to be huge. Some usually. Okay. So top of the world, mind you, keep that in mind. My group, single about to drop, pop music, the budget for radio, you have to have it when you get, like, the songs come out. There has to be a hefty budget for radio and all the things, marketing. Cash Money was used to doing mixtapes that you just throw up online, like, not a big budget radio thing. This pop group, their budget was gone by the time the single was about to come out. That was not good, because that resulted in what we call shelved. So we don't know that yet, but we're geared up, and like, all the money had been spent on the front end. We've flown five kids to Paris with their guardians for a couple weeks. We've done this, this, and this, $500,000 video. There's no budget now to market the music. And I think it was a learning lesson for all people involved. At my heart. But so all of a sudden, we're still living in Houston, and I am like 17 at the time now. And like, all of this, I'm trying to make this shorter than it is, but my group and I, probably 6 months in, like, we're like, what is going on here? Like, now no one's answering the calls. And Cash Money had, when they signed us, they had rights to sign off on any more of the shows that came in for the series that we were doing. So we're coming up on our third season, and at least we have the show, right? They have to sign off on it now. Birdman and Slim quite literally forgot to sign off on the third season re-up for our show. And the time expired on the script and the re-up. So we lose the third season. So now we're sitting there, no show, re-up. Everything's crumbling in a matter of 6 months. And I'm like, okay, this is not good. What do I do? I was like, we've got to move to LA. We've got to do it. My group was like, what? I was like, we got to get in their face. I don't know what we do, but we got to do it. My parents God love them. They were like, with what money? I was like, my big advance, obviously. We got like $10,000 a piece. Not a big advance. I thought I had money bags over here. I thought I was free. I was like, $10,000? Duh. $10,000 in LA. Mind you, back then, it could stretch. Inflation wasn't what it was now. An egg was not $10 an egg. But it wasn't going to stretch for long. I found online a 232 square foot box to live in. That was the cheapest option I could afford for $1,100 a month. Yep, you heard me. In North Hollywood. And my dad drove me from Texas to LA to move me in. I had a twin size bed from IKEA. There's no kitchen. There's no bathroom, really. It's like the kitchen and the bathroom are the same thing. It's like a gutted motel that they made into a apartment complex. And there's like limited space parking. So if you're not parked by 7, you are trying to find somewhere in North Hollywood to park after 7 o'clock. It was, looking back, it built some character. It did. So I move out there. My dad moves me in and I'm like, all right, bye. And now I'm on my own. And it was, my parents let me go do it because I was going to be hellbent either way. And I was like, I'm turning 18 soon. I'm going to go anyways. Peggy Sue, God love her. She was just like, well, with what money? And I was just like, I have my big advance. She was like, all right, because your college funds went to all of your music stuff. And like, yeah, we have nothing to give you. I'm like, okay. So I went out. $10,000 to my name. That was gone really quickly. And so my group moves out shortly after. They're all living in a house together. And I'm living over here at this apartment. And basically 6 months in, we tried everything. We tried to get their attention. And there was just no budget. And once you're out of the budget, that's it. So my first heartbreak in learning what shelved meant. So we're shelved, sitting in a deal. My group decides after years together that they're going to go back home and live a normal life. And I'm like, what is life outside of music? What do you do? And they all have beautiful lives. Like most of us still talk, and like they all have kids, and like my child is my dog still. One day I'd love to have babies, but not yet. But basically they just were like, we're going to go back. We don't want to do this anymore. And I was like, what? So they moved back, and now I'm sitting in this deal by myself. And long story short, shelved, you're stuck in there. You're stuck in it. And I can't pay the money back. I can't get out of this deal. At the same time, Cash Money, there was a lot of like heat around them then for like lawsuits and stuff. So like nobody would work with me on top of that and want to like get involved. And I was like, uh-oh, this is getting worse and worse. So I'm sitting in LA, start doing I'm working a couple different bartending jobs. And like I'm doing like side hustles to just make rent. Because I realized in that first couple months, the money is, it's gone. So I'm just like, okay, my box is, it's pricey, I guess. And Papa John's and I walk down the street, this is my food. So we basically, I don't know why I'm saying we as if I'm plural, but we, I am stuck in this deal for like 2 years. And 2 years after I moved out to LA. And I was on top of the world, have a TV show, touring the world. And in 6 months, my life flips upside down. And I'm working job after job to just make ends meet. My group is done. And I can't get off this record deal. And they won't let me out. So YouTube happens. And all of a sudden, these people are all getting famous online on covers. And I'm like, what? Like, what are you talking about? And my handle, I don't own the Shaylin, the name. And like, I can't do YouTube. Like, I'm like, what do you mean people are getting famous on YouTube? So like overnight, the industry becomes something entirely different. And then you introduce Spotify and all these different things and like physical CD sales, like all of it was changing before my eyes. And I'm like, what? So I finally, the grace of God, 2 years later, I get out of my deal with Cash Money. They let me go. Right there is my release date. Key back to my freedom. I was young. Obviously, there's a bad tattoos, but I was prophetic at the time. Anyways, so I get out, hit the ground running. I'm like, what is life again like a solo artist in LA? Like, what do I want to sound like? What do I want to do? I really wanted to go back to what I'd always known. I grew up learning how to sing in church and on country music. I met a team of people there, and like I was supposed to go to Nashville for the first time in that time period, but then was like swayed to go this way. And all of a sudden, I am like an EDM feature girl. And shocking, I have bright red hair, the whole thing. I'm trying to find my voice as a solo artist, and like I start writing by myself. And I'm like, okay, these are not great. We were given demos to sing by world-renowned songwriters, and now it's like shifting to the Chainsmokers, Baby Pull Me Closer, The Backseat of Your Rover. And that kind of lyric hit me more than like, baby, you're a firework. Like, I understood how to tell a story. So I was like, okay, so songwriting's even shifting. Let me start really honing in on this skill. So I'm writing like 24/7 doing all these DJ features. And this song that I wrote by myself, I ended up, somehow it landed in the hands of this publisher, signed my first publishing deal off of this song that I wrote by myself. So now I'm writing for other people, and I'm writing for like Dinah Jane, such a precious angel. I am writing for Dove Cameron, like all these different people, trying to figure out who I am as an artist. And then that song, the same song, was pitched to Hailee Steinfeld at Republic at the time. And whoever it landed in the hands, that song, they were like, who is singing the song? Me. And they flew me to New York, and I showcased. I'm skipping over a couple years, but they showcased me, and I am about to sign now my second record deal in 2018 to Universal Republic as a solo artist, and I'm doing pop music. And I'm like, okay, now we're gonna make it this time. Everything's lining up. I had this single that I'm doing with Macy Gray that we're interpolating, I Try. That was one of my favorite songs. She gave her blessing. Like, it was, the stars were aligning. I was like, this is it. Years of my life. This is what it's all been for. Okay. I get a really cool slot on a tour, and like, everything's going. I'm going back and forth from Korea to LA because I'm writing for K-pop artists over here. I have a massive song take off for a K-pop group over there called EXO. That's the group name. Coco Bop is the song. Yes, that's me. And it blows up. I see my first royalty check ever, and I'm like partially living out of my car at the same time, and like down in the slumps. And then record deal, song pops off, first BMI check, and I'm like, what is that? Was able to get into a new apartment. And it's lining up now. Right as iHeart wants the single, 20-year anniversary of I Try from Macy Gray, it's perfect. COVID happens. And I was like, no one knew what to do. COVID was the scariest thing for all of us because we're like, what do you mean there's a worldwide pandemic? Like, well, I was seeing videos over here, like, so everything stops for a second. And I'm like, it'll pick back up. It's fine. It didn't. Like, it just got worse and worse. Like, we pulled the single. I got to drop like an EP like midway through COVID once it started to become like normal. And I lost the tour wasn't happening anymore. And I was just like, what? I thought it was the worst moment of my life. Like everything of like, I don't know how I get all of that back. Like, so I'm over here heartbroken, and I've decided in COVID, I was really bad at Zoom writing sessions. It was not for me. So I was like, you know what? Let me take a step back, because music isn't what I'm starting to fall in love with anymore. Oh, and in the middle of that, I was like massively successful on Vine, if anybody remembers Vine. I got successful for doing 6-second mashups, if you will, cover songs. So like my first big one was, say my name, when no one is around, I'll be drunk texting you. All these loops on it. I was like, that's crazy. Pop it on Vine, doing that thing. And like, that was in the midst of all things going great. Vine disappears, the one app that's just gone. I'm like, goodbye to my following that I built on there. It was like 500,000 followers. I was popping. App is just deleted. I'm like, okay, cool, great. Never seen that before. So, okay. So, like, I'm telling you, everything was bad. Heartbroken. I take a step back and I'm like, I'm not going to write songs for the duration of this for COVID, however long this is going to go. And the world was like, I was like, nobody wants to hear my songs at the state of the world. Like, the world is not good. And it was just like, COVID was a whirlwind. Thought it was the worst thing that ever happened to me. And then in the middle of that, I get this pull that I every so often get, and it's the big guy upstairs. And it's like, it's the first time where it's like, there's nothing left for you here in LA. And I was just like, and in my head, if I left there, that was it. Like, what else do I do? I have to go find something else to do. I didn't think about anywhere else to do music. It was just LA pop music at the time. And I felt that pull. And I was like, no. I haven't felt it for all these years. And I'm like, so I sat with it. And I was just like, I'm not supposed to be here anymore. So I am breaking up with my life, essentially, of the plan that I had. And I'm in a relationship that goes horribly wrong. And I'm losing everything, like, before my eyes that was just right there. And so I was like, all right, God, I'll listen to you. I don't know what my plan B is. I don't have one. I have no money now. Like, it's all gone from COVID, trying to survive. And I don't know what else I'd do, but I'm going to start thinking about it. Cool. I'll listen. So I'm starting to, like, accept this. And I'm going to walk for music for the first time. And that was, like, 15 years of doing it professionally at that point. So in that moment of deciding to quit, I get an offer to go out to Nashville for the first time. And I'd never gotten to come to Nashville yet. I'd always, like, I would go up to the Opry when I was little from Chattanooga, but, like, I'd yet to come to Nashville. So I get to, they offer me to come write for people. And I'm stuck in a record deal over here that I can't get out of. I'm in all of these deals that I'm over here as the writer. So I go to Nashville, first trip, first day, first song is called What If I Don't that I write. And it was from this the most broken space. I cried six different times in front of those my beautiful friends, Lindsay Rhymes, Phil Barton, and Seth Ennis. I did not know the kind of room I was in. Okay, so first day, first song, What If I Don't? That whole week, I write some of my favorite songs that some of them, half of them are out now. We'll get to that. So that end of that week, I was the happiest I'd ever been because it was like, it was everything I had was told in LA, like, don't be, because people didn't understand, like I'm from the South. Like, I am Chattanooga, Tennessee, Dallas. Like, I have, like, these country melodies. I'm fitting in pop boxes. And then I'm, like, I morph into, like, sound like this, make your hair like this, like, you look to this, like, and that's just LA. Like, it is what it is. I'm looking back, like, I'm glad that I became all those different versions of myself because, I mean, there are some that I had to archive online because I'm like, oof, girl, we were lost. But I was just making music that I would put out pop music. And at the end of the day, if I don't believe in it, as like to the end of all being in my soul, if I don't believe in those songs, how is anybody else? So they never really translated or stuck. And I never really had success over there. Peggy Sue, my mom, was listening to most of them. Streams come from Dallas. I'm like, God love her. But basically, like, that person, or this is six different me's, whatever that was in all the genres that I was and would write for people and what I, like, pieces of those elements and I took from them. And, like, it all lined up for whatever happened over here in Nashville, because the first day I just, like, wrote, like, all of us, like, collectively, it just spilled out in 45 minutes. And that vocal is the original vocal. And I was just, like, so broken, but also just, like, wow, I'm the happiest I've been. Like, this is who I am, what I sound like, and nobody's changing it. Nothing. So the end of the week comes, and I'm, like, I don't want it to end. And I'm getting in the Uber, and I'm, like, going back to the airport. I know I'm about to fly back to LA and call it quits, because I'm in all these record deals and deals. And I get this nudge again, and it's like, there's your plan B. It's waiting for you in Nashville. And I'm just like, huh, that's cute. I'm in deals that you're not getting out of for the rest of your life. Like, what? I'm big in debt over here on the pop side, and, like, I'm just not getting out. There's no way on paper. But I have this, like, weird pull that's like, go flip your life upside down, face your fears, and what's waiting for you on the other side, if you trust me, way bigger than what your plans were. So I'm like, okay, sir. I go back, I show What If I Don't, this song, and I'm like, guys, hear me out. I think I want to switch genres finally and go back to what I know. Here's the song. Universal was so amazing because they were like, kid, you're so far in the red. And in a record deal, that means you're in a lot of debt that you got to pay back. I was so far in the red, they're like, we just want you to win. Just go. And I was like, what? I was like, am I being punked? Where's Ashton? Stop it. No, they let me out. They just let me walk. So there's number one deal. Every other deal, somehow over the span of a couple months, I get out. I don't know how to this day, the guy up there. And I pack up my car. I still have all this pop music up. And that was like the terms is just leave the pop music up. So I get to Nashville knowing nobody, knowing nothing. And I'm like, I'm going to put this song out now because I can. And I'm independent for the first time in my life because I'd always been on major labels. And I was like, we're going to do this independent. So I put it out independent and I make a pact. I'm like, all right, big guy. If in 6 months, this is not more than my mom for the first time, I'll stay. But if not, at least I was proud of whatever I put out at the end. I think I was still living in LA at the point of like putting What If I Don't out. And then I moved there shortly after. So I've been in Nashville now like 3 years today, like not today, but I've been in Nashville now for 3 years and put that out at the beginning of my journey in Nashville. First country song in this space, new, 6 months to the date. That there's a video I post and the video starts to go. And I'm like, this is virality. This is what they talk about. This feeling of dopamine, serotonin. I'm like, because before that, no views ever. I was using finger puppets to promote my music. Yes, do not ask. I was like, listen to my music on TikTok. Dark times. All of a sudden, I was just like, uh-oh, that's weird. I woke up overnight and it was just starting to go. Next video starts to go and that song starts to snowball and then it's starting to spike. Like, I'm like, that's more than Peggy Sue unless she has all these phone farms. It resonated with people in a way that I never thought it could. Like, most people say, like, I lost my spouse or like they lost somebody that they loved. And that, what if they move on? What if like they feel bad? And like, that's how most people resonated with the song. Whereas I was breaking up with my life. I was like, what if my life moves on? What if I don't? Wild how music works. But that song started to pave the way for the rest of my journey in Nashville and why I am here today. Because then that landed me. I mean, the song collectively now has done, and thanks to you guys, over 60, 70 million streams independently. My first song in this space. And like each song after that, like the next one was about my grandparents, landed me on Kelly Clarkson's show, which is where she told me I was funny. And I was independent. And then I get asked to do my Opry debut, which is wild. Chris Young's precious angel calls to tell me the news and then surprises me to intro me at the Opry. That night still doesn't, that wasn't me. That wasn't my life. But all of this has happened now in 3 years. And I'm sitting here today, 3 years later, and it was off of one song, which is leading me to my entire point of this story. Is that that one song, even though it was the most broken place of my life at the time, and you don't know how the dominoes are going to fall, and in it as a human, never remember that this is probably going to play out to be the best moment of my life somehow. Just keep pushing, because I was a product of like two record deals already. And I was like, nobody wants me in this space. I feel like I'm done. And I tried for 15 years at that point. And I came here honestly like letting go. I was like, you know, I have no attachment to the outcome. I think that's the most beautiful, hardest place you can become mindset-wise as a human. Because when you just like go, whether God is for you, like universe, whatever that is for you, there's something bigger out there. I do know that. And when you let that go and stop trying to push your way, it's funny how it falls because it's usually so much better than you even planned. There's a lyric in that song that it was like, what if in 2 years I still can't sleep because I'm sad and losing this person and my life? Like, I couldn't stop crying. I cried myself to sleep every night. I was so brokenhearted. And my plan B never existed anywhere else but that place. And it's funny because my grandpa always used this analogy of like, you have to view yourself as a watch at a pawn shop, that like, you're this watch that you're going to get it handed down to you. And if you go sell this watch one day, if you need to, it's, you need to know that until a pawn shop offers you nothing less than $1 million, you do not sell it. Every pawn shop you're going to probably go to is going to say $50. Do not stop because there's a pawn shop that knows what that watch is. Nashville, in a sense, was the pawn shop that over there, the value they saw wasn't the value that this place saw. And this person that I am over here, I just needed to remove myself from the surroundings that didn't see my value. And Nashville has been so beautiful because they've been so welcoming. And for whatever reason, coming back to who I was all along after chasing all these versions of myself brought me to this season where I'm just authentically me. And when you're just yourself, you're going to find your people and you're going to find the people that value you. And that's where Nashville was for me. I thought that there was no, that was it over here. And turns out that there always is another place. And sometimes it's okay that they don't value you in that spot. They're just not your people. So now that I've found my home and I found my voice and I found people online that if you've streamed that song one time, thank you, because you changed my life. And it's one song, one moment, one decision that is why I'm doing this podcast, is because I am here to share all of the years that we didn't even touch on most of the journey over there, but we'll get into it. All of the years leading up to it has brought me here. And that one decision of like, you're scared to go do, or somebody's told you no, or it's too late, or this or that, No, it's not. It's never too late. If you have a burning desire inside of you that you're like, I have to do this, that is your reason you're here. You're here exactly at the right time, the right place. There's only one of you. Do not get caught up in social media. Do not get caught up in comparison, because you're you, they're them. You, it's a highlight reel online. You don't know what they're going through. Could be just only posting that, but then they're like devastating over here. We'll never see that. Don't get caught up in that. Your that thing in you, go do that. Whether it's so scary and big, it doesn't matter, because everything is right here for you to grab. It's yours if you want it. So that is what I'm going to leave you with on this episode that I've talked for a very long time. But this is going to be the journey of Rent Money Confessions, is that that journey for me, we're going to do all the confessions. Who are we? The tea is piping hot, I will tell you. Piping. Little by little. Let it go. But the confessions are how not glamorous this is. How, if you're chasing music, because we're going to, this is music related, but it's also life. Like, I've learned your lessons that I now feel like it's the time, perfect time to share them with you and hopefully help your journey be, maybe it helps you avoid some of these areas over here that I had to learn the hard way. Or like, maybe it's a, you feel like you have a pal that like you're, we can talk, whatever. Like, I want to make this as interactive and as a vulnerable space that you can find it here. And like, we're homies here. And I'm going to bring with me all the confessions and life lessons I've learned for 17 years of doing this and tell you all about them now. Because it has not been an easy journey. That's just a bullet point story. Each episode we'll get into topics of this journey. But I'm here to let you know that your dreams, they're yours. You are a rock star, and there is people out there that value you. You're a unicorn. You're magical. And I just want everybody, like my shows, after you're done watching an episode, for whatever it was, maybe there's topics that we touched on that make you think, whatever. I just want this to be something that you go and feel a little better, or therapy, if you will. We'll have a little therapy sesh. But I'm just here to remind you that if I'm sitting on these couches for today, or on a stage, I on paper am not supposed to be up there in this season. It wasn't possible. And I am living proof that that dream that you think is not possible, it is. So whether you're at the beginning, the middle, the end of your journey, you feel like you're just about to give up, wherever you're at, whatever you're chasing, if it's in you, if you feel like that's why you're here, keep going. But two, right before you hit that moment, that's usually when it's about to all pan out. And I'm just here to remind you, you got to let go, because do everything in your power, work your butt off, and then let go, because it's going to pan out to be probably much better than the way you planned it in your head. And that's something as humans that we have a really hard time finding out how to be in that headspace. And I struggle still to this day. Like, all of a sudden my publishing deal came on the table with, I'm now with Sony over here on Pub, and I got a record deal with Nashville Harbor and Big Machine, and like all in 3 years, like my life changed. And now like I got this season that I never thought I'd get to experience. And there's days I hold on to it too tight. Like, don't go again. Like, and those are like where I get thrown off and I'm like, let go again. Like, it's all going to work out. Life is always going to work out. You're always going to have just enough in your bank account. And if not, there's going to be a miracle that happens and like, you're going to be okay. But that dream, go chase it. So if this first episode is to remind you of that, welcome, Rent Money Confessions. And I'm just excited to start this chapter because there's a lot that I've wanted to talk about and share. And I feel like it's finally the time that I have enough knowledge under my belt in certain areas that I feel ready to share. So I love you. This is a safe space that we're going to create for each other. I can't wait to hear what you think. Please chime in with topics, questions, anything that you want to hear every time. At the end of every episode, we're going to have Rent Money Reflections. See that? Like what I did with the words? That's the only time I'm good at words, is like songs. Putting feelings into words are my, like, I love, but only in songs. Because if you see my text messages or voice notes, they're mini TED Talks podcasts, really. So this is a great space for me to do that because it's one long podcast. But Rent Money Reflections are going to be our ending things. Whether I have a guest on or whatnot, we'll end with these. So today I got some questions that I asked my little broadcast channel, which if you're not in there, you should join today. It's on my Instagram and my TikTok. But it's a little community that we're building up. And it's going to be that you guys get all the tea first. You get to help navigate how you want this to go. In music releases, merch. So go sign up my broadcast channel. It's called Polished Messes because I'm unhinged, well, feral, but a little put together. I am wearing a onesie, Bucky's onesie. Once again, Bucky's. But I'm just a mess. I'm a mess figuring it out. And my songs are the blueprints for how I figure it out. They're just real life lessons I'm learning in real time. And then I put them out so hopefully that they make it to one person even. And that my job was done. I hope these episodes make it to whoever needs it because I'm excited. It's a new blueprint for me to share with you along my journey and leave the world a little bit better than when I got here, hopefully, at the end of it. So Rent Money Reflections will end each one. And my broadcast channel question that I got, let's see. There's a few questions. Okay, this is a deep question. What's the hardest truth I've had to face about myself in the last year? There's a few. Hardest truth I've had to face about myself. I think that my biggest, I'm a people pleaser to the end of time. I do not like confrontation, like the whole, I just like everybody to be vibes high. And I will stay so small because of that. My biggest fear was speaking out and setting boundaries for myself. Out of what I've learned, our boundaries are love. And you set them because you love the person. Boundaries are not out of like anything other than you want the best for the relationship involved, like friendships, whatever. Boundaries are actually a good thing. How the other person receives that boundary is not up to you. And so what I learned last year, because it was a year, if you will, making it out of that year, my biggest fear, one, speak up for myself. When something's not serving me anymore, I'm like, hello, this is not working for me. First biggest fear. Second biggest fear, setting a boundary. And hopefully the other party respects the boundary. If they don't, then you have to sever the boundary and they no longer go on your journey with you. That was my second biggest fear of like, you didn't hear me? That's fine. I'll stay small again. Anything that anybody else did, I will like to a fault suffer. But that was, I set the boundary and then I removed those people and that's okay. They were part of my journey. Now they're not. And three would be looking back and being proud of myself. Being proud of myself is one of the hardest things. So I looked back at that year and it wasn't the year I thought it was going to be, but I grew internally that is priceless and faced my biggest fears. And now I run my business and like I run it with integrity and honesty and I'm running a business and that's cool. And I did it by myself. And so, yeah, I think those are three things that like I never thought I'd do any of those a year ago and I did. So don't stay small. In a lot of scenarios, like if you're like me, people pleasing, and speak up for yourself. And it's okay if people don't respect that. So I love you guys. Welcome to the first episode and let's chat our little hearts out.